Hi everyone, and welcome to oh my gosh. Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of the Do Your Thing podcast, where we are talking to women that are doing their own thing, taking a little bit of a different path than what we might be expected to do. Here with you is Amma, who is one of the co-creators of the Summer Virtual Connection Circle, and with me I have Allie. Allie, how's it going?
Going great.
Fantastic. And our guest today is Charlo Lauriston, who is a comedian based out of New York and has a web series called Clench and Release, and is also one of the writers for Netflix's Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And Charlo, say hi to everyone.
Hi, guys.
All right, so Charlo, let's get ourselves rolling with our first question. Now, in lieu of traditional introductions, we like to let people tell a story about themselves as a child, growing up, maybe in school, when something that they did or something that happened to them was a hint as to what they were going to eventually do. Do you have any story like that?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't particularly funny growing up. I wouldn't say that I'm particularly funny now. If anything, I'm like a very serious person. Like, I can be silly sometimes, but... I was also very quiet and shy, like all the way up through college, I would say. Like, I feel like I didn't really come out of my shell till like maybe my sophomore year of college. So when I was in, I think I was in middle school. No, I was in high school. Oh my gosh. I was a sophomore or junior in high school, and I was in a history class, and I had this, there was this one girl in our history class who kept saying something like, our teacher was teaching us a lesson, which I do not remember, I'm sorry. Like, I don't remember the lesson whatsoever. That's how much I learned in history class. And, like, this girl just kept saying, well, if this happens and that happens, because, like, the teacher was trying to get us to, like, analyze the history or something, or, like, just basically just think critically about the information he was giving us. And this girl kept going, like, if this happens, this is going to happen. Then I turned around and I was like, well, are you a psychic? Like, everybody started dying laughing. And it was literally, like, I was so terrified at the laugh. it shook me awake. So I was like, what the? Like, I didn't even know what I said that was funny. Like, it was the first time anyone had ever laughed like that at something I said. Like, I couldn't believe I got that big of a laugh. And, like, I didn't know it at the time, but, like, that kind of laughter or, like, getting that kind of laughter is, like, addictive. It's, like, it's a rush. It feels so satisfying to, like, make people laugh like that. And it was totally unintentional. And, like, you know, after that day, like, every day I went back to that class, I had all this anxiety that, like, people were going to, like, expect me to be funny, and I'm, like, not funny. I was, like, terrified every day I went to that class and just, like, kept my head down and tried to, like, not talk. And, like, every day people would, like, look at me, like, say something funny. I was, like, oh, my God, like, there's too much pressure to be funny. I'm not that funny. And, of course, now I literally do that for a living. I can't believe it.
If you just actively chase that laugh, just like, laugh at me, I need it, come on.
No, like, I literally didn't even connect that until I became a comedian. Like, I didn't even connect how much I loved getting that laughter. But, I mean, or even the pressure or the anxiety of having to be funny all the time. Like, I didn't even think about that stuff until I became a comedian. I was like, oh, my gosh, look at that. There was that one time I was funny.
That's awesome. So can you tell us a little bit about how you decided to make Clench and Release, and do you remember the moment where you realized that it was something that you really wanted to take on?
I think it was definitely, like, Issa Rae has this podcast on YouTube called Awkward Black Girl, Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl. Yeah, it's awesome. She's awesome. She's amazing. And I remember seeing that podcast, web series. I remember seeing it and thinking, like, holy shit, this is amazing. And I don't even know why it's so amazing. Like, and I realized that it was amazing because you literally just, like, never see narratives of black people where they're just being normal and not, like,
being black people, if that makes sense. Like, they're not, like, the black person in a white person's narrative. They're just, like, this is their own narrative, and this is a story about black people. But it's not about them being black. Of course, it's peppered with jokes about, you know, black jokes, because that's the society we live in, and that's, you know, there's a lot of humor to be mined in, like, the experience of being black. But, like, you get my point. Point of the matter is, it was good, and I was, like, so excited to see something like that. And I initially, I talked about this a lot, actually. I initially, like, made a web series called Funny Girl, and it was, like, one episode of it. And I, like, watched the episode, and it was garbage, and I, like, never released it. And then I felt this urgency. Like, I felt like I needed to put something out there ASAP, because I felt like there was just this, like, growing, like, hunger for content that was, like, original. There's just this hunger for original content, and I wanted to be in the ring. Like, I wanted to play, you know? Like, I was like, I want to get on the field. I don't know if I can play. Do you guys get all these sports references? I just made, like, three. But anyway,
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I just wanted to, like, get in the action and, like, be a part of the conversation, and, like, I just wanted to do it so, and I felt this, like, insane urgency, and, like, it took, I think, maybe a year after that, because, of course, you know, it takes money, and it's, no one's paying you to do it, and, of course, I'm broke, or, like, I was broke at the time, because I was working a regular job, so all this money that's going into the web series is my own personal cash money. So it's painful. Yeah. So I had to wait a little while before I could do it again. But even more so, like, I wanted to wait until I had an idea that I thought was worthy of, like, spending that kind of time and money. And, like, the more shows I watched, the more thinking I did about what I wanted to do, I just figured that, like, simplicity is always key. And I feel like that was the thing that the first one was missing. Like, it was just not, it was just too complicated. Like, there was too much going on. Like, I just wanted to do something really simple. So I was like, the next idea I have is just to literally sketch out my jokes. Like, each joke, I'm going to write a sketch around it. So for, like, if you watch Clinch and Release, the first episode is called Chicken Shaming.
Which is an amazing joke, by the way.
Yeah, it's called The Code, but, like, you know, the joke is chicken shaming. And, like, I literally just, like, sketched out an episode around that. It's a 30-second joke. Like, I just sketched, like, you know, like, what would chicken shaming look like? And I made four episodes, because I was like, if I can do anything, I can do four episodes. Because, like, to me, five sounded too much. Three sounded like it wasn't enough. So, like, if I can do anything, four is it. So I made four, and that was it. And, I mean, it was my favorite thing I've ever done. I'm so proud of it. And, like, I felt like, you know, when I was done, I was like, okay, cool, this is good, which is hard for me to say, because it's not easy for me to be like, I mean, I'm not that humble, but, like, I can be humble about some things, and, like, this is one of them. It was just, because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's literally, like, putting yourself out there to put out your work, because it's you, so it's humbling. I'm, like, very, you know, grateful and humbled, I'll say the word again, that people like it or respond to it or, like, repost it or tweet about it. Like, anytime anyone says anything good about it, like, it literally brings a tear to my eye. Like, you wouldn't believe it. Anyway, that was a really long answer to why I did Clinch and Release. Yeah.
Well, and I think that it's got a very personal feel to it. Like, you can tell that it's something that is very much a part of you and things that have happened to you and a narrative that you get a lot out of, and it's putting your voice out. And is that scary? Because I feel like sometimes your story, like, getting it out there and kind of having people give feedback on it is very much a reflection of you, more so than if you weren't so connected to the work. So how do you deal with that part? Like, if someone ever did say anything bad, that could feel really personal because it's so much of it is you.
Yeah, someone mentioned on I think it was, like, YouTube or something, or Twitter, someone tweeted, someone was having a Twitter conversation about Clinch, which, first of all, like, you know, I jizzed in my pants. I was like, oh, my God, somebody's having a conversation about this? No, I'm not even in it. It's just, like, two other people talking about it. And he said that he thought the series was good, but that my acting was, like, you know, the acting in it wasn't good, and my acting in particular wasn't good. And, of course, it, like, it hurts. It cuts like a knife because, you know, it just hurts to hear that stuff. But at the same time, I was kind of excited because I kind of feel like when you start getting criticism, then it starts becoming, you know, more legitimate, if that makes sense. Like, if everybody is saying they like it, then that means it's like my mom and like my friends that are watching it, and they're like, I love it because I love you and you're awesome. But it's like when other people who have no idea who I am and they've never met me, they don't care about my feelings, and they're talking about it in a constructive way, I feel like, hell yeah, like that's what I want. Like, I want to hear those things. And you better believe, like, next time I'm trying harder as far as acting goes. And it's because somebody took the time to watch it and comment on it. And I feel like that their, you know, comment is as relevant and as, you know, useful to me as somebody saying that it's good. Like, you know, just because somebody says that it's bad doesn't mean that, you know, just because it hurts to hear it doesn't mean it's not true, and it doesn't mean that I can't use that information to make it better. Oh, my God, I sound like such a scholar, guys. Remember when I said I wasn't humble?
It was a very educated answer, which those who I know who are responsible for your education, I should also say in the interest of full disclosure that I work at Charlotte's alma mater. So the people that I work with are very pleased to hear you sound as eloquent as you do. So I will pass along that message as well.
Nice. I mean, that's all I have to say about that. Really amazing.
Cool. So think about, like, everything that's kind of come up, like the conversations on Twitter and having everything else that's kind of led you being successful. Can you think of a moment that you're particularly proud of that you're like, oh, this is all worth it. Cool that that happened.
I think the moment I think I'm, like, the most proud of maybe is when I got hired to write for Tina Fey, only because it's, like, my first comedy job. And I think, like, when you're, you know, because when you're hustling as a comedian, and it really very much is a hustle, it's like you work during the day, you have to have some sort of, like, money-making, like, thing, and then you're out all night doing stand-up or improv or taking some acting class or taking some improv class or, like, whatever it is that you're doing. You're also, like, kind of taking this huge risk, you know, like, I'm not going to grad school, I'm not going to law school, I'm not pursuing a career that, you know, I know I know the steps to get successful at, if that makes sense. Like, you know, in any other, like, industry, you kind of, like, know how to get there. Like, if you want to be a doctor, you go to medical school and you do, like, your whatever, like, medical people do, and then you become a doctor, and that's how you become successful. And it's, like, for comedy, it's, like, you toil away, and you have no idea if you'll ever be successful. And, like, a lot of times, and, you know, and that's because of the way that the world works, like, your career validates you, you know what I mean? Like, making money validates you. So if you're super broke, and you have no idea if you're going to be successful at all, and you have no, like, clear markers of success ever, you know, like, maybe you'll have a really good show, but then, like, that night, like, your cell phone gets cut off because you couldn't pay for it or something like that. So it's just this world where you don't get very much validation. And I think it's good on some ends and it's not great on other ends, but the reason why getting that job or, like, getting the call that I got that job was so significant is because, like, all this time I've been working and it's, like, finally it gets, like, recognized or validated in a job from someone that I, like, absolutely look up to and think is amazing and hysterical and, like, you know, a mentor, an idol in the field, like, and it's a lady. Like, you know, it's not like Jerry Seinfeld hired me or something. It was like Tina fucking Fey. It's like another lady. Like, that, it meant so much to be even considered, and to be hired was, like, insane. And it just, like,
it just took me to a different, like, plane. It took me to a different level, and it was, like, such a significant moment, and it felt so good, and I was so proud of myself, and I was like, yeah, like, it's one of those things in your life that makes you feel like you can literally do whatever you want. Like, it makes you feel like you took that chance, you worked really hard, and now you know for a fact that you can actually have what you want. Like, you can dream about something, and you can, like, and I don't even like to say dream, because I feel like, you know, when people say dream, it's like this very, like, I don't know, like artsy, like elevated thing, and it's like I want to say you can work for something and you can get it, because, like, that's really what it is. Like, whatever you're dreaming about, it's like in life you're like getting on the train and like getting up on stage and like actually doing stuff. So it's not really dreaming. It's like living life and working really hard. Anyway, I go on and on, guys, unless you stop me.
Okay, so talking about that, sort of, you went from producing your own web series to moving on to the staff and being part of the writing team. So how was that transition? And I'm sure people want to hear more about your experience on Kimmy Schmidt, because people are so obsessed with that show.
Oh, I'm glad people like it. I thought it was a really great experience. I mean, I did have a lot of tough moments, like, because I was learning a new language, frankly. Like, you know, you come in and it's my first writing job. I've never written on a show before. And I haven't even been a comic for that long. Like, I've been a comic for a handful of years, which is like, not that long. So there, I was intimidated. I was terrified. You know, it was tough. I have no other word for it. Like, I learned so much from the people that were working there. But, I spent so much time filled with anxiety. If anything, I would say that, like, you know, the biggest lesson I learned from that is not to waste time being afraid of and, like, letting your anxiety get the best of you, because I feel like so many times I let my anxiety get the best of me. Honestly, I was like so terrified. But aside from that, like, I learned a lot. I, you know, feel like I did as much as I did a great job, and like I did as much as I could, and I worked really hard, and there were late nights, and I mean, some people stayed later than me. Most of the time people stayed later than me because of the higher level writers usually did that. But yeah, I would say that it was like a tough experience, but a really great learning experience.
I like it.
Do you guys want to know, like, specifically? There is an article. I did an interview for Brooklyn.com about writing for them. And I specified, like, I mean, I talked about, like, what it was like every day. Like, we walked in and just, like, we sat around a big table and we, like, there was, like, a big TV screen where we did, like, we basically, like, went through and, like, punched up jokes or, like, wrote, you know, ideas from scratch on that TV screen. It was like that. It was, like, really, like, super chill, but also kind of, like, a little bit stressful because you're, like, trying to be funny all day and, like, being funny is your job. And once again, just like history class, stressful to have to, like, be funny all the time.
That middle school anxiety all over again.
Yep.
So were there any...
That's foreshadowing there.
Ooh, I like it. I remember, like, reading Bossy Pants and Tina Fey, like, goes through the 30 Rock writers, and she talks about each one of them and, like, one of her favorite jokes that they wrote. So if she had to write that for you and she had to pick a joke that you wrote, is there any in particular that you would, like, want her to pick or one that you're particularly proud of?
Well, I mean, all I know is that, like, the biggest laugh I got in the room while we were writing is when Titus Kimmy reveals where she's from finally, and Titus goes, "That explains why you're so basic." And that was me, and that was like the biggest laugh I got in the room. And I would hope that it's like, I didn't get nearly as big of a laugh. Like, it's very much like a mini comedy show. Like, there's like 11 people sitting around a table, and you're basically trying to make each other
fucking laugh. And it's like, you know, you won't always get big laughs, but like the biggest laughs usually make it in the script for sure, because they're, you know, if they're funny in the room, they're almost certainly funny at a table read, and they're probably going to be funny on camera.
What was that like for you to... What?
So I was going to say, that joke in my own house 3 times in 2 weeks, because that's how long it took me to go through the show 3 times, it got a laugh in my house every single time. So, it's solid.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Now, what was that like for you to be, you know, watching Netflix and seeing your joke on this show?
I mean, it felt really good. It felt really good. Like, I honestly didn't even think about it, because it didn't seem like surreal to me anymore, because we spent like 8 months writing that show. So like by the time it finally got on Netflix, it was like, you know, I'd seen it a bunch of times and like rewatch it. I'd been to the table read. So I kind of feel like it was almost like, what is the word? Like anti-climax. It's like an anti-climax because it was just like, we'd done it so many times and like I'd seen it so many times. I feel like the real amazement was like just being there for the first time, or like actually getting that job for the, you know, when they hire you, like that's the real like surreal moment. But by the time it comes on TV, it's like you're like very much grounded. You like understand you write for a TV show, and you're like over it. You're like over all the magic of the, you know, like Tina is not magic anymore. It's just like the person you see all the time. Like, you know, the magic kind of goes away, which is good. It's okay. You know, you peel back the layers. You see what it really is, and it really is just like long days, long hours, hard work. Like, you know, the creativity is not always on demand, and you kind of have to like make it on demand. Like, you know, you have to be creative on demand, and like not everybody works the same way, but you kind of just have to do it because, you know, that's your job now. Which once again, I said, brings on a lot of anxiety, but like, yeah.
I like that though. Like it doesn't always come on demand, but eventually it comes to you, and then you end up with something really cool that exists on the internet, presumably in perpetuity, that other people can get something really fun out of.
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about everything that you've been through up to this point and how long you've been doing comedy and how it turned into something a little bit bigger for you, what advice do you have for anyone who might be thinking about doing something like that? Like, they kind of want to set out on their own and do something a little bit different, but they're not really sure. What would you say to them having done it?
Well, first of all, I would say, I mean, okay, guys, this is going to be long-winded and multifaceted, like, because that's who I am. It's like, first, I would say that if you've never done the thing that you want to do before, instead of like, I'll get emails from people that have literally never done stand up ever before, like they've never gone on a stage, and they want my advice on like how to do stand up and like how to do stuff. And I never ask for advice. I'm not saying that me never asking for advice is better or worse. I'm just saying that like, I don't even know if you fathom like what to ask for if you've never even done it before. I would say that like instead of like wasting time, which I think is procrastinating, just my opinion. I think instead of procrastinating and like asking people like what it's like, do your own research, you know, online. Like figure out what it's like and then do it and then actually do it. That's the first thing. Do it before you ask people for advice about doing it. And this does not go for, like, you know, professions that actually need that kind of thing. I'm just talking about, like, maybe writing, maybe, you know, performing music or performing theater or whatever. Like, that kind of stuff, like, just you just literally have to just do it. Other things, maybe not. But for that, you have to do it.
Gotcha.
My other thing I would say is that never, ever, ever, ever wait for anybody's permission for anything. Like, I think, like, when I was, like, first making Clench and, like, or whatever other thing that I was making, like, I, you know, one person said to me that, like, they wanted to do something, but they just felt like it just, like, they kind of weren't ready yet. Almost as if they were waiting for this, like, outside permission to, like, tell them, okay, you're ready now. You can do it. And I'm pretty sure, like, Amy Poehler has said it, too. Like, never, ever wait till you're ready, because God knows when you're ready. Like, who knows? You don't know when you're ready. Nobody knows. Just do it. And, like, never, ever wait for anybody's permission to do anything. Like, I felt like a lot of times, like, as a female in the mostly male scene, like, I felt so trepid and, like, cautious and, like, kind of waiting for them to, like, accept me and like me. And I'm so glad I didn't waste a lot of time doing that, because it's just not a part of my personality in general to, like, you know, do that. But, you know, I was new, so I didn't know as well. But, like, I literally did not do that for long. And I feel like I did so much in that time and watched other people not do as much because they were, like, I don't even know. Like, I don't, like, waiting to be kind of, like, accepted into, like, the circle or whatever. So never, ever wait for anybody's permission. Never, ever wait until you're ready, because you don't need either of those things. And I maybe the last thing I would say is that, I think that, like I said, like, the biggest thing I learned from writing on Unbreakable was, like, me being in my own way. You know, like, I was so excited to get that job, but then, like, immediately I was, like, nervous and felt like I didn't belong there and felt like maybe they made a mistake. Like, maybe they, like, totally, like, overestimated how funny I was. And, like, I don't, you know, like, I spent so many days thinking that I didn't deserve it. And all that did was waste time. It's an absolute waste of time to, like, sit there and not believe that you deserve to be in a place that you actually are. Because at the end of the day, literally nobody cares. Like, nobody cares that there's, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on this production. The last thing that anybody cares about is that you don't feel that you belong there or that you are scared or whatever. Like, Nick Napier has a great book called Improvise, and, like, one of the, you know, first sentences in it is just, like, nobody gives a fuck about your fear. Like, nobody gives a shit about your fear. Like, nobody cares. No one has time for it. And it's 100% true. No one has time for your, like, your fear. Like, no one has time for you to, like, second-guess yourself or question yourself. Like, I would have saved myself so much time. And it's a thing that, like, you know, it doesn't come easily. Like, I've had to learn it over years and years of just, like, being battered from stand-up. Because stand-up is, like, so hard. It's, like, it can be so brutal. And I'm so grateful for, like, the lessons it's taught me to just, like, you know, like, no one cares about if you're scared. Like, no one cares. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's a waste of time. Like, what I should have done and what I know now is that, like, the more relaxed I am, the chiller I am, the more anxiety I let go of, the funnier I am. Like, the more fun I'm having, the funnier I am. And it's, like, impossible to be funny or be good at your job or to, like, go after what you want if you don't think you can do it, or if you're sitting there in your head terrified. It's just, like, the better thing to do is to just figure out a way to relax yourself, calm down. Like, I'm literally talking to myself, like, you know, from the future. Like, Charlotte from the future, like, chill out, like, relax. Like, just have fun and, like, do what you're there to do. And so those are the things, guys. I said in the beginning it would be long-winded and multifaceted, and I did not disappoint.
But it's all good stuff, so it's all good.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm being super honest about, like, what I learned. I will never say that it was, like, like, I had such great moments there, but it was my first job, and it was tough for me because I just was so nervous. It was just, like, what a waste of time, like, being so nervous. Jeez, it was, like, such a waste of time. And, I mean, now I know that, but I had to learn that.
Exactly.
It's a tough lesson.
Yeah, it's a tough lesson.
So, all right, Alex, I think the closers.
Yeah, so now we have some closing questions that we want to ask you. And this one, I'm super interested to see what your response is going to be. So who is your favorite woman in pop culture right now and why?
I mean, Amy Schumer is, like, killing the game right now, I have to say. I don't know if you guys watch Amy Schumer on Comedy Central. But this current season, she's got, like every sketch is, like, viral and, like, a total hit. And she just did this 12 Angry Men sketch
where it, like, the whole episode is like 21-minute long episode where they redo 12 Angry Men, and like the question the jury is debating is whether or not Amy Schumer is pretty enough to be on TV. And it's just so well done. It's so well done. It's so, like, funny and subversive and, like, a big middle finger to, like, so many things. That was just, like, and usually, I mean, I'm, like, really loving Comedy Central right now because there's few, like, networks you can go on and, like, laugh out loud at so many of their shows. Like, I think Broad City, Key and Peele, Amy Schumer Show are just, like, absolutely, Daily Show are just absolutely killing the game right now. Like, they're such strong, amazing shows, well-written, good content, like, insanely good content, funny, provocative, forward-thinking, smart, like, and I think Amy Schumer is, like, killing it right now.
I love it. She's so smart and, like, can joke about, she finds a way to joke about stuff that people think that you can't tell jokes about, and she finds a way to do it. But it's not just in a way that makes it funny. Like, it's funny, but you also think about that reason why you can't joke about it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Also, her episode of Comedians in Cars Drinking Coffee or whatever that Seinfeld show is hilarious if you haven't seen it.
No way. I haven't even seen it. I'm going to Google it right now.
It's so good.
I'm going to add it to my list. All right. So you talked you talked a little bit about this already, but other than the just big relax, it's all going to be cool kind of a thing, what other advice would you give to 18-year-old Sharla?
OMG. Oh, God. 18-year-old Sharla is such a shit show. I don't know if I can swear on this, but that's who I am. So, like, 18-year-old Sharla is such a mess that, like, I don't even know where to start. But, I mean, I would say for sure, like, you know, I think 18-year-old Charlie, like, always, like, I had so much anxiety. I don't know if you guys can tell, like, a very anxious, like, kid, like, into my adulthood. Like, I'd have to struggle and, like, deal with it, like, learn how to calm myself down. And, like, 18-year-old Charlie was just so scared of everything, like, scared of talking to guys, scared of speaking up in class, scared of, like, making a mistake, scared of, like, looking ugly, scared of, like, wearing shorts, or, like, scared she was fat. she didn't wear, like short sleeves. She hated her arms. She, like, hated herself. She was scared of she's scared of her own shadow. she was just so scared all the time. And, like, what I would just tell 18-year-old Charlotte is just chill out, bro. Like, chill. This is not... Like, life is scary, yes, and the world is scary, yes, but, like, calm down, chill out. Like, you're going to be fine, and you're, like, you're great, and you've got a good head on your shoulders, and you're a good kid, and, like, you don't have to be so afraid all the time. It's really not that scary. I feel like what happens is I would just, like, whatever little thing that happened that made me anxious, it would be the whole world to me. And, like, it would take me so long to realize how small that thing was. And it was just, like, a little thing. And now I do it so much faster and so much better. But, you know, I still struggle with it, and I still have to do it. But I'm so much better than I was at 18. I would just tell 18-year-old Charlotte to just chill out. Like, don't be so scared all the time. There's nothing to be afraid of. Like, it's not that scary. It's gonna be all right. I sound like I was gonna commit suicide at 18. I was scared of that too. I'm like, who cares? Anyway,
well, I'm glad you didn't. 28-year-old Alma needed to hear a lot of this, so thank you for that.
Oh yeah. No, I never would have. I was brought up way too Christian for that.
So the last question is: what one thing would you tell women that are trying to do their own thing?
Oh, I think I've already said it, girl. I mean, like, once again, don't wait for anybody's permission, you know, ever. Don't ask anyone's permission. Do your own thing. Do whatever you want to do. Don't apologize I stopped apologizing years ago, particularly to men, not in like a douchey way. Like if I actually did something to you, I would apologize. But like, I felt like I was always so apologetic and would like keep my head down. And it's like, no, head up, chin up, like head up, look forward, be powerful. You're a valid, legitimate person. And like you, whatever you have to say is important. And you know, even if it's not important, like that's another, it's like, even if what I have to say is not important, I get to talk because I get to talk and there's no other reason. Like no one gets to tell me what to do. I can do whatever I want. I don't need anyone's permission. Like, I mean, I can go on and on about like how much, you know, self-confidence, and having a sense of, I don't know the word. Like, I was going to say self-importance, but just, like, a sense that you matter, you know, like that whatever you have to say has value or that you have value. And that, like, I was also going to say that 18-year-old Shala, back to that question again. One thing I did love about 18-year-old Shala, I would have told her what I loved about her, too. And, like, what I loved about her was that she didn't spend too much time, like, worrying about being pretty, even though she did have, you know, normal, like, self-conscious things or, like, normal insecurities, like, about weight or, like, her skin color, you know, or her hair texture or whatever. She had those things. But aside from that, she didn't, like, care too much about those things. Those things didn't rule her. And it was, like, 18-year-old Charla was much more concerned with, like, learning and, like, you know, figuring out who she was and, like, becoming Charla today. And I'm like glad, so I want to tell 18-year-old Charla that I'm proud of you for like, you know, doing that and like taking the time to like figure yourself out and not worrying so much about what you look like or things like that. And I'm proud of her for that. But anyway, for women in general, yeah, totes just like don't let anybody tell you what to do. You're a boss and like you don't need anybody's permission. Or you don't have to be a boss. Like, literally, you can do whatever you want because you can. And there's like, no other reason just because you can. Like, you don't need anyone's permission, bro.
I love that.
That was so eloquent, right?
Well, I mean, I really like that part about just, like, you get to talk because you get to talk. Because I feel like I talk to so many women that just don't feel like they can say what they want to say. But
yeah.
I think there are a lot of times when you just need to hear, like, no, just talk. You're allowed. Just say what you need to say.
Yeah. Also, I had one friend who, like, she always, like, second-guesses herself and, like, kind of, like, whenever – basically, okay, this is a story, and she'll never listen to it, to this, so it doesn't matter. She does not listen to podcasts, but, like, this is just, like, an example of, like, how she lets people treat her in general. Like, there was somebody on Tinder. She's dating on Tinder, and, like, someone, like, messaged her, and then he literally didn't message her. He stood her up. They were supposed to meet. He stood her up. Then he did not message her for 2 weeks. 2 weeks later, he messages her, and she, like, immediately replies to this guy's message. And I was just like, are you insane? Why did you even reply to this person's message? This person, she was like, I didn't want to be rude. I was like, but he was rude to you. So it's just like, you're giving him more consideration to a stranger you don't even know over the internet than you give to yourself. Like, you are giving this person more respect than he ever showed you. Like, why would you ever reply to this person's text? They don't even matter. Like, they're just a thing on Tinder. Like, they're just a person on Tinder. You never met them. And it's like, this person had absolutely no respect for your time. And then they had the audacity to, like, ignore you for 2 weeks as if they couldn't possibly, like, answer a message. And then finally get back to you when they had the chance. And then, like, you jump and reply to them. And it's just like, I mean, I think it's you must be demanding with your time. You know, that's what I think one thing women do sometimes. I don't even want to say that it's, like, a general thing. But you must absolutely demand that the people in your life respect your time, like, not play around with your time. If they want to play with your emotions or with your time or whatever, like, you don't have time for it. Like, there's no way, like, that is a thing that's cool or okay. Like, that's not cool because you have respect for your time. You have respect for other people's time. And you absolutely must demand the same kind of respect that you would pay to other people. There's no way that someone treats you a certain way and you let them treat you that way and you give them more respect than they ever gave you. people earn your respect, and that's the only way they get it. They earn it. If they don't deserve it, they don't get it. If they don't deserve your time, they don't get it. You must protect your time and your space like it's like your life depended on it. Because I feel like women are such kind people naturally. Like, genetically, women are, like, warm and, like, want to take care of people. So they, like, let people do these kinds of things. And it's just, like, no. Like, you determine who gets to take your time up. It's, like, you don't have forever. Like, you're an important lady. You've got things to do. Like, nobody can just, like, stomp all over it in that way. So that's, you know, let me just wrap this up nicely. Like, you are in control of, you know, your space and who gets to enter it and your time and who gets to share it, and that's it. And it's like, if people don't respect it, then they don't deserve it. If they don't earn your respect, then they don't deserve it. And it's like, you must be commanding, and that's not rude. It's not anything. It's just that you are an important human person and you have feelings. You deserve to, like, have your time respected and your space respected and all that other good stuff, you know?
I'm going to use this last bit as, like, my daily affirmations when I wake up in the morning.
Right. Good, I'm glad.
I thought about that. Just a whole wall in front of my desk of, like, stuff from this, like, 40 minutes roughly, and just, it's going to, I'm going to allow it to inspire me and just walk through it.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah. No, it is solid stuff, and stuff that I feel like we need to hear more often. So I'm glad that we got you in this venue to tell everyone, because everyone needs to hear it. And by everyone, I'm assuming all the people that are going to listen to this. I don't know how many that is, but I feel really good about it.
Hundreds of thousands of people are going to listen to this, guys. The point of the matter is that, like, every interview, every podcast I've ever given, I say the same shit, because it's the stuff, this is the thing, these are the things that I've learned, like, you know, no one, the world is hard and no one makes it easier for you except for you. And that's it. And it's like, if you don't do it, no one will do it for you. So you got to do it, you know?
I love it. Do your thing. That's what this is all about.
Yeah, guys.
I feel like that's a really elegant stopping point, even though I want to talk for like 4 more hours, because this is just making me feel good about life.
Oh, good. I'm so glad, Anna.
Well, Sharla, thank you so much for being with us. This was a really good conversation full of lots of things that will now populate my vision board. yeah, so really, really solid advice about life in general.
Well, thank you for having me. You guys are delightful, and I wish you the best at this podcast.
Thank you so much. All right, I'm going to close this out for this week. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Enjoy the rest of your day or evening or whenever you happen to be listening to this. And I look forward to sharing more with you, more great stories in the very near future. So take care for now, and we will talk again soon.